much love that.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, February 24th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And good afternoon, members. Thank you for showing up on time. Senator Burdick will not be with us this afternoon, although she is available if we need her. And we have three bills that we will be hearing just in public hearing today. So I will begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 292. And Erin, would you tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 292 repeals duplicative statute regarding conflict of interest for Planning Commission members. This measure has no revenue impact. We have not had a fiscal impact statement issued yet.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And it looks like we have one person signed up to testify. So I'll call him now, and that's Ron Burson from the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. I believe this is your first appearance
this session. Is this year.
I'm sure not your last, though.
I look forward to it. Again, my name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I'm here to speak to you in favor of Senate Bill 292. 292 would repeal ORS 244-135, therefore eliminating the troublesome duplicate statutes and alleviating confusion for public officials who are Planning Commission members. The Commission is in favor of passing this bill for the following reasons. Methods for handling conflicts of interest for Planning Commission members is already covered under ORS 244-120. The specific requirement for Planning Commission members is confusing by the use of terms not used in other parts of Chapter 244, such as direct and substantial financial interest. An example is the definitions in the conflict of interest statutes is a private pecuniary benefit. So these are different terms than were used in other portions of the law. And repealing the statute would eliminate the confusion for Planning Commission members throughout the state of Oregon. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions for Mr. Burson? Okay, thank you very much. If you are planning to testify on the next bill, you're welcome to just stay put. Okay, and I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 292 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 293. Erin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 293 extends exemption from statutory gift limit to include admission provided to or cost of food or beverage consumed by a relative of public official who accompanies public official at reception, meal, or meeting. We have no revenue and a fiscal statement has not yet been issued.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And Mr. Burson, I see you're still here, and so welcome back, and just say your name again for the record. Tell us about this bill.
Yes, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. I'm here to speak to you in favor of Senate Bill 293. Senate Bill 293 would amend ORS 244-0206-B, to allow a relative of a public official as defined in ORS 244-020, subsection 15, to accompany the public official to accept admission provided to or the cost of food or beverage at a reception, meal, or meeting held by an organization. The Commission is in favor of passing this bill for the following reasons. The current exception allows members of household to attend. Many times relatives are not members of household and are currently excluded from the exemption. Examples include taking your college-age children or your parents, etc. This gift exception allows public officials to attend an organization's functions where at times they are honored for their work. The intent of the exception was seems to want relatives to attend these sort of functions. The Commission is asked on a regular basis if relatives can attend, where unfortunately, if they are not household members, they are excluded. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Your testimony? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Yeah, third part staff member, please. There's a third part of this that's also a staff member, correct? Of the public. Line 23, page 2. Household of the company official or a staff member of the public official.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist, the staff member has always been part of the exception. This bill would simply add relative to it, but the staff has always been able to attend these receptions, meals, or meetings held by an organization.
So follow up. So then the bold print here is just legislative council adding more clarity, correct?
I believe so, sir.
Yes, it looks to me like they just added the word member.
Right, it does. Trying to figure out if it's him or LC doing the grammatical work here.
Okay, is that it, Senator Boquist? Okay, any other questions? Okay, I don't see any, so we'll thank you for your testimony and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 293. Looks like both of these are fairly straightforward, so they'll probably be coming back to us in a work session soon. And next, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 294. Erin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 294 provides Oregon Government Ethics Commission rulemaking authority to assist in enforcement of executive session provisions of public meeting laws. We have no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact has not yet been issued.
Okay, thank you, Erin. We have several people signed up to testify on this bill. So I think Ron Burson is still with us. We'll have him testify first and then call people in the order that they signed up. So unless you had somebody you wanted up here with you.
That's okay. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, again, my name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. I'm here to speak to you in favor of Senate Bill 294. Senate Bill 294 would add ORS 192-660 to ORS 244-290, subsection 2, giving the commission authority to promulgate administrative rules governing the proper use of executive sessions. The commission is in favor of passing this bill for the following reasons. Administrative rules would add clarity to the complex set of statutes used by over 1,700 jurisdictions throughout Oregon and many levels of government, as in state, county, city, and local. Executive session complaints over the past several years have outnumbered all other complaints filed with the commission. The commission believes in the majority of cases, this is simply due to the lack of understanding of the statutes. This lack of clarity in the statutes creates challenges in the Commission's effort to fulfill its enforcement and educational missions. The effort for rulemaking started with the frustration of many governing bodies having to face defining representatives of the news media as it pertains to 192-660 subsection 4 of the executive session laws that allows members of the media to attend executive session. Several local governments and government associations were attempting to write policy to give guidance to their members or bodies on how to define members of the media. Requests were made to the commission to approve these policies. Unfortunately, the commission has no authority to approve statewide policy on executive session. The commission held two public meetings to help define members of the media. The first meeting was with members of the media. The second was with the members of the governing body and representatives of the association. Both meetings were very informative, but no clear definition was obtained through the process. In the absence of clarity of who is media and who should be allowed to attend executive sessions, the commission requested the Attorney General's office for an opinion on the subject. The commission is awaiting the written opinion. Lastly, the commission believes the absence of rulemaking was an oversight when the commission was given the regulatory authority on executive sessions back in 1993. The commission cannot find one other example of an agency given regulatory authority over a section of law without administrative rule authority. The commission appreciates your consideration of the bill. The clarity of administrative rules will help prevent inadvertent violations of executive session provisions of the public meeting laws. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Burson, Senator Farioli?
Thank you. Mr. Burson, apparently the Oregon Newspaper Association opposes the bill. Can you tell me why?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Farioli, I hope they come to testify to give you that idea, but in them participating in the meeting with us when we invited the media to the commission to help us define media and give us their concerns, they have a policy that's out there that they would like to use, and I would say that the rule is they don't know what the rule says. They know what their policy says. So, but I think it's better if they tell you why they opposed and why they didn't. But they did participate in the meeting.
And they will be testifying shortly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the fact that we should listen to the folks that have their concerns. But I always like to hear an argument restated by somebody to whom an argument has been made.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Okay. Another question, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Does this act at all to limit the participation of news media representatives by definition, by changing the definition?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Ferlioli, I don't believe that it does. The problem that came in with representing the news media is that the when the laws were set up back in the 90s, frankly, the news media was different than it is today. And I think that the public bodies are struggling with trying to find out who is actual media and who is not. I mean, the traditional media we know is there, but the online media presence that's out there, when do they actually become news media as it pertains to this law that allows them to attend executive sessions? And I think there's some reservations about where the commission would draw that line compared to where the line has been drawn. And that's why we have tried to take ourselves out of that argument by bringing in the Attorney General and asking them to define it for us.
Okay. Madam Chair, I think the problem we're having is the problem we're having with the 21st century. Anybody literally who dragged a portable typewriter along and a notebook and an egg flash camera would be assumed to be a journalist because they had the obvious trappings. Today, if you have a cell phone with a camera and access to the internet, you have all the same tools in a different platform. So, you know, the question is, what's a legitimate journalist? And I think the answer is that a legitimate journalist always agrees with me. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Senator Brockwist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to understand because I have 192.660 opened up here, and obviously it's a body of law and it's the topic you just mentioned here. I'm assuming either Madam Counsel from the committee or from Mr. Burnson, I mean, this body of law is something that appears everybody else is already using. It's just at some point the Ethics Commission didn't have it stuck in their stuff. Am I correct here? Because this is already printed, so.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I don't see any further questions for you, so thank you again, thank Mr. Burnson. We'll let you go. And next I'll call Kelsey Wilson and Ellen Miller. I think the two of you can come up together. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Committee on Rules. And whichever of you would like to go first, please go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. For the record, my name is Kelsey Wilson, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. ONPA opposes Senate Bill 294 as it's currently written and has some concerns with giving the Ethics Commission broad rulemaking authority over the executive session provisions of public meeting laws. The bill as drafted does not give any indication as to how the Government Ethics Commission intends to use their rulemaking authority, so we have no way of determining their legislative intent. If the committee intends to move the bill forward, we would respectfully request that some language be added that says something to the effect of establishes a procedure with the newspaper publishers and other stakeholders under which the commission shall provide guidance on media representation in executive session. ONPA is supportive of open and transparent public meetings and public records and looks forward to being engaged in the conversations that the legislature and Governor Brown are embarking on this session. Thank you.
Okay, I think we'll hear from both of you and then open it up for questions. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Ellen Miller with CFM Strategic Communications, representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. We did participate in the work group that was mentioned in the interim, and we did express some concerns that we had regarding the definition of representatives of the media. Right now, we do not have a position on this specific legislation. We just wanted to get on the record some of our concerns. The first and and foremost is that executive sessions do stay open to the media. We do feel it's important that the definition of representatives of the news media is as broad as possible to serve the society best. We think that the broader the better for definition. We also ask, similar to the Newspaper Publishers Association, that there is something that gives us a seat at the table when this discussion moves forward, whether it be in the legislative arena or at OGEC. We'd like to continue to be at the table and be able to view our opinions on this.
Okay, thanks. Thank you both for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Okay, I'm just, can you help me out here? I'm looking at 190-660 is the executive session, which I'm assuming probably applies to, you know, county commissions and, I don't know, dog catchers board or, you know, nurse practitioners commission or whatever else is out there. And it seems pretty clear to me from your two perspectives that, you know, we get the Oregon Newspaper Association, you know, if you're a reporter for the Statesman or whatever the paper is and your members, I got that one, KATU or TV radio station or whatever, I got that one. I guess the question is what's the definition problem? I mean, is it the other edges of media that are outside of you guys? Because I know you guys get access to a lot of these things already elsewhere under this law, but what's the definition problem that the commission was, since you're in a work group, but what's this, what's the crux to the definition problem?
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I actually would ask for maybe OGEC to respond to that. I can speak from what I observed in these work groups, but I really feel like they need to answer the question of what is the problem. Chair, would you like me to speak on what I observed?
I'll follow up.
Okay.
I think we can follow up with you one-on-one.
Right. I want to follow up with a question.
Go ahead.
So I guess what I'm trying to grasp here is that your normal individuals, newspaper reporters, television reporters, radio station reporters, which, you know, they don't have the typewriter carrying around with them, but they're pretty easy to figure out who they are. That's one broad definition, and those individuals are, is there some indication that the Ethics Commission doesn't want to have those types of individuals involved, or is it the other people that are running around with their phone cameras, which is why I don't allow, as both of you know, I don't allow cell phones in my office, because everybody's taking pictures and recording things and not telling you what they're doing. I mean, I'm trying to look at what is your definition? Forget the commission. What is your definition of media reporters?
Well, I think Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist, I think that that's the discussion that we want to make sure we're at the table with the Ethics Commission deciding, is what, in addition to traditional media, like the newspaper publishers and the broadcasters, who else is included in that definition and what access do they have to public meetings? And we just want to ensure that we have a seat at the table to help draft anything that would redefine the definition of media.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Farioli.
Well, I had to point out the obvious, Madam Chair, but the table that you're going to get a seat at is the one you're sitting at. This bill's moving. It's Senate Bill 394. If you're not engaged in it in some way that's more than academic, I mean, if you're waiting for somebody to drop the dime and call you and say, come sit at the table, that may never happen. So the point I'm making here is that if you've got a problem with this bill, you better dig in, get your oar in the water, and start talking about the addition of ORS 192660 and ORS 192685 to this set of statutes, because that's what's proposed in this bill. So having a concern for some future date is not going to move you toward a goal of expressing your concerns or reshaping the policy. The policy's already reshaped. It's in this draft. So I'd like to hear you weigh in on this. You're for it or against it, or you're going to bring me and the committee members amendments. But, you know, having a seat at the table sounds nice. This is the table.
Senator Rosenbaum, Senator Farioli, I think, as I mentioned, the newspaper publishers currently oppose the language as drafted and would recommend amendments to the language that would give us a seat and put some sideboards around some legislative intent as to what the Ethics Commission is intending to do.
Then if you need help in making sure that the drafting of those amendments are facilitated, drop by my office.
Appreciate
that. But let's not wait till I mean, this is in play.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Any additional questions? I don't see any. Thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you.
And next we'll call Rob Bovet. And we also have Chuck Downman. I guess you can come up one at a time because I don't think you're really, well, why don't we let you both come up?
For my committee, I make the pro and con argue right in front of
you. Okay.
Get it down to a science.
Sure.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rob Bovet, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. As I was listening to what was previously discussed, maybe we should set the stage appropriately, and then I'll tell you where AOC is at. First, Oregon is rather unique. In fact, I think we are unique. Most states don't allow media in executive sessions, and my colleagues around the nation find it surprising that we do. You might wonder why we do that, and there is a definite reason. There's a legislative history to that statute. There's a couple of reasons that media use the statute. One is to get basically advance warning of what local government is going to be doing in open session, get the inside scoop. The second is to act as a check and balance on what local government is doing in executive session to make sure they're not violating executive session law. The legislative history in Oregon is very clear that the intent of the legislature is the latter. To use media as a check, not to give them inside information, but use them as a check to make sure local government isn't violating the statute. So as Senator Farrell has pointed out, media has changed. We have new media. So AOC's concern here with this bill is that this bill would just give the Ethics Commission broad authority to define news media. But it varies dramatically from county to county, from city to city. For example, in my home county, the primary news source for most Lincoln County citizens is a blogger. He's not traditional media. So if we define media to not include him, you will be functionally excluding the primary news source from being in the room that you want the check and balance for. And I could see just the opposite result in some metro areas. Somebody who wanted the inside information wasn't there to act as a check and balance, wanted the inside information on something that they personally cared about, maybe even litigation that they were personally involved with, might set up a blog and wind up in an executive session being entitled to listen to attorney-client privilege material, for example. So we're very concerned with how this is defined. So I've put before you a proposed amendment-1. It may not be perfect. It may need a lot of work. But basically, it would preserve local option to further define news media because it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction rather than having a one-size-fits-all. So that's where AOC is at. I'm happy to answer any questions and entertain further conversations about this.
Do we have this amendment?
Madam Chair, it is posted on OLIS.
Yes.
I didn't.
Yeah, but I have. But I do have a copy, and we can certainly get some additional copies if anybody didn't get a chance to print it out.
And Madam Chair, if I can mention one of the things that I think was alluded to but not clarified. So many years ago, local government officials got together with media and created a sample policy that has been adopted by some local jurisdictions that attempts to define media, and it's been adjusted from community to community. And I think it's working pretty well.
If you do executive session, there's a block here.
So, yeah, I'm just now looking at it. It looks like then each governing body of each local government would get to determine which entities of the media qualified to attend these executive sessions, so that could vary from one jurisdiction to another. Is that right?
Madam Chair, that's exactly right. Based on the two examples I just gave you, I think it can and should vary, in fact. And so it's a concept that I offer up for your consideration because as a practical matter, that's what's happening right now. And I think for the most part, you'll find that it's working. Now, we have 36 members. I suspect that's the bulk of them will probably default to whatever it is the Ethics Commission writes up. But some very small counties and some very large counties might want to further define it.
And you're suggesting that they would just codify what they're currently doing then?
Well, I think it would have to be fluid. They could codify it and actually Legislative Council wrote it up as an ordinance. I think that actually is not right. And that's my fault because I wasn't clear. A number of local jurisdictions do not have ordinance enacting authority. Cities and counties do, for example, but many districts don't. So it probably needs to mention by rule or policy if you were to adopt the concept language that I've put forward.
So we'd need a further amendment?
Yeah, this amendment's not ready to go. It's more for your consideration.
And members, it looks like we're getting copies for you momentarily. You should have those. Senator Farioli, did you have a question?
It's just a follow-up, Madam Chair. Mr. Vovet, I can envision 36 different approaches to who are and who are not legitimate credentialed media, and 36 lawsuits based on the discriminatory practices of the jurisdictions involved. So with Oregon's very strong First Amendment traditions and open and sunshine laws, and our essentially the only admonition is you can attend the executive session, you can't report on it. So the solution is worse than the problem, because I think it leads directly to litigation. And I don't, can you help me understand how this provision will not contribute to a swarm of lawsuits as bloggers and would-be journalists, if that's even a legitimate epithet, or novelists decide that they were unfairly excluded from a public meeting or an executive session of a public body?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I think that's exactly what's happening now, and we aren't seeing lawsuits because I think local government is behaving responsibly in that regard. And I would agree with you, Senator, that the prohibition is on not reporting what happens in executive session, except if the local government goes beyond the scope of what's allowed in executive session, then the media is and should be privileged to report on it, which is the way the check and the balance actually works.
I'm sure, just an aside, and then I'm happy to hear the rest of the story. One of the interesting occurrences recently is that local governments have stopped doing local audits on themselves. And the result of that is that, well, Cresswell was an example, but there's been several other recent examples of people going 2 and 3 years without an audit and finding a horrible knot of conflicting claims and litigation and a mess, and that has to do with the absence of due diligence. You know, holding the local government entity accountable is part of the Fourth Estate's cherished tradition, and the thing that they're holding accountable in this instance is that executive sessions aren't used inappropriately to essentially shield the body from discussions that normally and should and properly and are legally required to be held in public. So, you know, there's two edges to the sword. One is don't report. The other one is jurisdiction. Don't use executive sessions as a peach basket to hide your light under. So, you know, the modifications are worrisome to me, at least on one case, because I know from personal experience that local jurisdictions have difficulty with people wanting to push their way in to meetings where perhaps it's inappropriate for them to be. And they claim the cover of journalistic license. You know, you may not be able to establish their credential. That's the problem of the First Amendment. You know, you're stuck with taking positions that you personally wouldn't take because of the principle involved. That's what I think we got here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. I don't know if you had a response to that.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I agree with 100% of what you just said, and you said it very well. That is the issue.
Any additional questions for this witness, or do you want to wait?
I just want to wait and see the other half, then ask questions of both.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Chuck Tauman. I'm a lawyer in Portland. But more importantly, today I'm here as a member of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. We must seize this moment to work across party lines to restore the public's trust. That means passing meaningful legislation that strengthens the capacity and independence of the Government Ethics Commission. eloquent as those words are, they aren't my words. They're the words in the inauguration speech of Governor Kate Brown. And I think that she and the legislature is committed exactly to that process. And I think this is one of the methods by which the independence and the capacity of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission can be strengthened. The Oregon Government Ethics Commission, as you all know, you're all veterans of this this body, is the statewide watchdog that was established by the legislature, strengthened by the legislature over the years, and is composed of seven members who are appointed. Technically, they're appointed by the governor, but four of whom are appointed by your caucuses, the House and Senate Republican and Democratic caucuses. So they're broadly representative both of the state's citizenry and of the legislature itself. They are, in fact, a creature. We are, in fact, a creature of the legislature. Not only are the rules and the procedures and the substantive, the ability to enforce, to educate, to complete our mission part of the statutory authority that was granted by the legislature in establishing the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, but the members of the commission are accountable to this legislature. They have independence because they're given four-year terms, but in fact, each succeeding appointment is made in part by the legislators who are then in leadership. In each of the three areas that the Government Ethics Commission regulates, the public officials, lobbyists, and executive sessions, of those three, two of them, we are given specific and express statutory authority to make rules, rules which define the method of enforcement, that define the penalties, that define the training that's available. Only in one, which seemed to have been an afterthought in 1993 under the government ethics, or excuse me, the executive session provision, is there no mention of statutory authority. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have authority. There is a theory in law of the implied authority for an administrative agency to define the terms that it is required by law to enforce. But instead of exercising that authority, we have come to you to get the specific grant of authority for rulemaking in this one area, this one necessary area. Executive sessions are conducted by law by every council and board in this state. 1,700, I believe, was the number that was used. And every time an executive session is called by the chair or the presiding officer, there is a jeopardy. And the jeopardy is that it has to be done exactly correctly. And if that board chair or presiding officer does it wrong, then there is a potential liability for enforcement by the Oregon Government Ethics Commission upon complaint. The fact is that the executive sessions are very difficult. They can be too broad. They have to be announced correctly. The participants have to be limited as they are by law. And one of those limitations is that representatives of the news media must be allowed to attend, with an exception that if they are representatives of organizations who are involved in active litigation with the board or commission, then they can be excluded. So there are specific ways of protecting against these difficult situations. The representative of the news media is the most difficult because the media plays such an important role in our democracy. As has been pointed out, they are there not to report, which is their normal function, but to not report, but to act as a watchdog and a check against an abuse by the public body or commission. Ironically, any abuse allows them to report the proceedings. Of course, they're taking their chances on whether, in fact, the abuse has occurred. And that may be decided by a third party at some later date. So everyone is in jeopardy. And the way to solve this problem and to make everyone's life easier is to establish a definition, in this case, of representative of the news media, a definition that is established by rulemaking, administrative rulemaking, which is under statute required to give notice to a broad number of stakeholders. Everyone, in fact, will be at the table. Everyone who wants to be will be at the table. Everyone will receive notice. Everyone will receive notice of a draft rule, and there will be an ample opportunity for individuals, organizations, trade groups to enter their input, either in writing or by testimony. The government, Oregon Government Ethics Commission, will be accountable to the legislature. Whatever rule is promulgated, and I'm not here to say that there is a particular rule that has been discussed or contemplated, but whatever rule that is contemplated will be subject to the legislature's final authority. They can change that rule. They can abolish that rule. And so the safeguards are in place by prior Oregon law. What's missing is our statutory authority to promulgate those rules. I agree with almost everything that's been said here today, even though some have expressed opposition to this. This is an issue of setting policy, but it cannot be a county-by-county issue. It has to be statewide policy because this is statewide law. It has to take into consideration individual county, city, board prerogatives and their opinions and individual policies, but there's no such thing as allowing each board or commission to set its own policy. That doesn't work, and it leaves them in jeopardy of having an ethics violation if there's a complaint. The question then is, who draws the line? And right now, the Oregon Government Ethics Commission is drawing lines, but we're drawing lines on a case-by-case basis. As you know, the membership of the commission changes. They're limited 4-year terms. Some commissioners may feel one way about drawing a line, and some commissioners may feel another. And so it's very important for the people of Oregon, for the boards and commissions, and for the media to have a single line drawn. In terms of a seat at the table, as I mentioned, everyone has a seat at the table in rulemaking. One of the witnesses mentioned the broader the better. Well, in a watchdog role, that is something to a policy to pursue. The broader the watchdog, the better it is for the citizens of our state. Finally, I have to say that it's really been a privilege to serve on the Government Ethics Commission. It's been difficult work, low-paid work, I might add. But the fact is that I believe that the commission has, at least during my term, has committed itself to serving the people of the state and also the people that we regulate, the lobbyists and the public officials, but most importantly, the public. And I think in order to continue to serve that public, we need this rulemaking authority that has its oversight by the legislature. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And Senator Beyer has a question.
So this just focuses down on really defining through rule, the proposal, who the media is?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, yes, I think that is certainly that's the focus of the discussion about this, although the grant of statutory authority covers all of the aspects of executive session. So this just happens to be one of the most controversial, in fact, the most controversial aspect, and one that is likely to become more controversial as time goes by. So the answer is primarily yes.
So I've not heard of any controversy on it. Can you enlighten us about perhaps some of the examples?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Byers, I can try. There were cases before my tenure on the board that I've been apprised of involving what we would call, I guess, bloggers, people who have media credentials, however you would define it, but not conventional media. And when they are excluded, then they have the right to complain. And there have been instances, both before my tenure and during my tenure, of these types of exclusions. So the main, as Senator Farioli said, what we're facing is defining terms that were made in the last century for use in this century. And one of the reasons that we thought that rulemaking was the appropriate way of doing this is it gives the Oregon Government Ethics Commission the flexibility to account for new media that may arise in the future. Now, obviously, this is all subject to rulemaking, so it's all accountable, but nevertheless, it allows the flexibility to account for things that were never contemplated in 1993 when we were given authority over executive sessions.
So you mentioned that I would argue, as you have, that you actually already have that authority under the Administrative Procedures Act. In fact, not only do you have the authority, I think you probably have the obligation where the law is not clear under standard legal principles.
I would, Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, I would invite you to come to the Ethics Commission and make that argument, which I have on a consistent basis. I agree with that, that we not only have the ability to do that, we have the and authority to do that, but we do have a constitutional obligation to do that so that people who are who are responsible for administering these laws on the ground level have that information that allows them to make the distinction to draw those lines. So I agree entirely with you.
You probably could get at the problem. I mean, I guess it depends if you can get agreement. What I'm hearing you say is that you don't have agreement on the commission. But you probably, as you have with a lot of other areas, by just putting out educational document, if you will, guidelines, which then, even if they're not in rule, if somebody complained, a reasonable argument by the aggrieved party, or not the aggrieved party, but by the offending party would be, but we followed your guideline.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, yes, in fact, that has been one of our options, to pass a resolution. The problem with passing a resolution is it doesn't have the same safeguards for the public in general, for the representatives of the media, whomever they are, for the boards and commissions, as rulemaking does. But there are, we could also use a case, a decision in a case, although we don't have many decisions. As you may know, most of our cases are resolved through a compromise process, but we could use a specific case to write a decision to establish. But as you know, with the courts and certainly with the legislature, you can take a position one day and are perfectly free to change that position. So it doesn't offer the safe harbor that a rule does.
Okay. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Council, I'm struggling here. I'm back at the beginning. I mean, you started out, the tape will show, with a broad sweeping statement from now Governor Brown that we're in an ethical crisis and somehow we're going to fix it now with, I guess, Senate Bill 294. I'm struggling here. You got 1,700 entities that are already doing this now. The good senator to my right, I want to point out he is to my right today,
yeah.
that you know, as you pointed out, we're kind of already doing this. You haven't, you said, well, previous to me being on the commission and cases and settlements, but, you know, I don't see something overwhelming. I mean, I have a start off that says there's a huge ethical problem, and then we don't want the media or want to redefine the media, which I immediately, being a military officer connected, there's an ethical problem with the media. And so I'm, like, struggling here. Why are we even, I mean, I don't see the problem you're trying to fix, unless it is you want to set one standard and then go back and get all 1,700 entities in the state to change their standard to match your standard. Is that what we're really trying to do?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist, I don't think that's what we're really trying to do. I mean, that's not the purpose of setting a statewide standard, but that will be the result of it, that if a statewide rule is adopted and individual policies are followed that don't comply with that statewide rule, then those people, and in fact, it's not the media that are in jeopardy. We don't have jurisdiction over media, but it's the board members. And I should note that even though it's the chair that calls the special executive session, all members of the boards and commissions who participate in that executive session are liable for enforcement action. But the fact is that they are in jeopardy. I believe that there can be rules that are flexible and give the individual jurisdictions some amount of ability to make judgments, and those judgments will, as long as they fit the criteria of the rule, will be allowed. But the fact is that without the a standard that applies statewide, the presiding officers and members of boards and commissions have no protection, no safe harbor for conducting executive sessions.
Madam Chair, can I comment on that too, or do you not want me?
You certainly can comment if you wish.
Just a couple things I've heard that I think just need to be put out there. We do have a model policy that we've worked with the media closely on, and many jurisdictions have adopted, and it's working quite well. The second thing is, and I think counsel pointed out quite correctly, and Senator Farioli referenced the issue, which is there is a missing accountability piece. Let's say a member of the news media attends an executive session, makes the decision to report on it because they feel that that local jurisdiction has exceeded their statutory authority. And I've heard the word risk and accountability used in reference to that. There is no risk. There is no accountability. Because if media does that, there's nothing local government can do about it.
I've got a slew of them. Why don't you jump in here now?
Senator has been furiously writing post-it notes over there. So,
well, just getting to your point, though, and I'm sitting here thinking about that. I've been on a number of different local government boards and groups, and invariably, whenever we were going into executive session, and I think this probably comes from the council, from the special districts, the counties, and the cities, there is a script that you read. And you're sitting there reading generally to an absolutely empty room. But you read every one of them for that reason. I don't think that changes, and I'm not really sure what the risk is, and I haven't seen the complaint. The real problem that you're going to get into, any of them are going to get into, is defining media. And my experience has been, and we haven't had that, the blogger thing, I haven't seen a lot of that. But it's sort of a, when in doubt, let them in. You're just not going to fight that battle. If somebody says, I'm from the media, the question or the real issue is not that. The real issue becomes, they attend, and then they report. And there really isn't any effective enforcement of that. That's really the issue, is you can't hold them to the standard. And frankly, usually what they do is they sit in the room and they can't report on it. But having made all the notes, as soon as you walk out the door, it's, what about this? What about that? And if there are as many local government officials are not sophisticated enough around that, they end up giving them the whole context of the executive session.
Okay, Senator Farioli, how about it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we have 1,700 different jurisdictions currently engaged in this process. It's a rarity that I ever hear of a complaint. So I would just assume that the 1,700 that are out there struggling with this issue are somehow muddling through to the point where the level of complaints are so low, they rarely are ever reported, and they certainly aren't an issue that I can even remember hearing more than maybe one or two times in the tenure that I've been in the building. So let me just point out that as inconvenient as a case-by-case decisionary process is, it's the minimum expectation for our justice system. We expect you to look at all the factors involved to render a decision in the case that there's a complaint. We expect you to look at the facts surrounding it and then render. The idea of the Ethics Commission writing its own rules is troublesome to me in this way. I want you to be the referee. You know, I don't want you to write the rule and then be the interpreter of the rule when people have a complaint. That, to me, is a conflicted arrangement. And I can tell you, as legislators, everybody in this place has been told, well, we'll give the authority to the agency, and when they write the rule, if we don't like it, we'll just change the rule. That's not how it works. You don't get to go change a rule. You have to go ahead and recast the statute. And, you know, you literally have to legislate to change the objective of a rule. So giving the referee the rulemaking authority and assuming that there's some sort of a checks and balances system attached to that is fallacious. It's not the way it works in this process. So I guess just another observation. I hear, and I'm not unsympathetic to, the vexation in dealing with folks that don't have a press card, you know, and that are not credentialed by a news organization. And I particularly hear the vexatious and almost contemptuous characterization of bloggers. But I have to tell you, bloggers are referred to as ex-Oregonian staff writers. You know, these are not nobodies. These are not, you know, you can't, there's no stretch of the imagination that would lead you to conclude they're not journalists. They are journalists. They just happen to be using an electronic format, and they may not be as often in the print media as they've been in the past. But I would tell you, they consider themselves journalists. They make a living by it. As a matter of fact, they continue in service by how many hits they get in their blog. So that's not a criterion. I guess what I would say is that if you look at the way the separation of powers appears to work to me, the legislature is the one that frames the policy. So if you wanted to bring forward a draft of what the definition would be, I think you're better to put it in statute than you are to put it in rule. Bottom line is I'd love to see that language. That way the principle would be embodied in statute. You in the executive branch would be responsible for implementation. You and the Ethics Commission would still maintain your referee position. And when we all screw up, which is what's inevitable in this process, we get to go to the judiciary, and they will tell us what we did wrong and maybe even have some suggestions for corrective action. But I would say instead of rulemaking authority, bring me the language you'd like to see. We'll, you know, we will share it with our colleagues, the 90 of us in the building, and perhaps that language will carry the case, and we'll put it into statute, and then you will have the responsibility for implementation of that principle. It, believe me, you don't want to be in the rulemaking business, and certainly you wouldn't want to try to sell it to any legislator that once a rule is put into place, the legislators will somehow have a second bite of the rule apple. We don't. We just don't. So I would expect the proponents of that principle to bring forward amendments that would frame the what is the definition of a representative of the media, and I will put that definition right up with my treatise on wolves, and you'll have as many blog hits as I did on that comment. It went viral. Go ahead.
Thank you for your comments, very early. I don't know if anybody wants to respond to them. This is actually sounding quite familiar because we did have a very similar bill last session, although we started it later in session, as I recall. And it also left the rulemaking just sort of open. And I think what happened to that bill was that people were just doubtful that their input would get reflected in that rule. And so I think Senator Farioli is probably onto something when he suggests if there is language, trying to get it drafted, which we would be happy to make our staff available to work with you on, might be a better way to go, because then at least people would know what we're talking about. So, and I assume, although you didn't respond to it, Mr. Tillman, that the amendment that was suggested, which left this open to various local governments to interpret, wouldn't really change anything. It would just basically put the current problem into the law. So
Chair,
the commission entertained that idea, but
Chair Rosenbaum, I think that's exactly correct, that I haven't seen the amendment, I haven't seen the language, and I understand that it needs some massaging anyway, but the fact that if there are if there is authority for each jurisdiction to design its own definition and apply that, then you'd have 1,700 different policies, and I don't think it would serve the public. If it were granted safe harbor against, if it were not granted safe harbor against an ethics violation, then it would still leave those people in jeopardy, which is the state we are today. If it did grant safe harbor, if they followed their own policy, then it takes the protection that the law gives to the public and to the media, quite frankly, on the outside looking in.
Senator Beyer.
First, I agree with you. I don't think you can have 1,700 different definitions. If we're going to have a definition, I think it probably is best, I would agree with Senator Farioli, it'd probably be best if we set it in statute. I'm not sure we can get agreement to put something in statute, but that's a problem. The other one, I want to make sure that I'm correct on this. There is currently no penalty for the media violating, is there?
That's correct. Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, that's correct. There is no penalty. We have no jurisdiction over members of the media. I believe that some of the, and I don't remember the exact wording of the policy, but I believe that the part of the policy may focus on a remedy for violation. When I say policy, I'm talking about the Newspaper Association.
I think you can exclude them from future meetings.
Yes, exactly. And so there
future
is
executive sessions.
Yeah,
because you can't keep them out of a public
meeting. Correct.
You can exclude them. The public body can exclude them from executive sessions, but that doesn't protect the public body from an ethics violation if they do exclude them. Even though under their rules, if they've have one strike against them or two strikes against them, let's say they've published something that shouldn't be published, the Ethics Commission is not bound by that exclusion, and so if they are members of the media, representatives of the news media, and they are excluded as a sanction, they may face problems later on.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
I think there's an absolutely eloquent detente between the news media and the local jurisdiction in that both need each other and both can damage each other, and therefore they both have very strong incentives to follow the law and not to violate the trust. So if you mess with that, basically you may end up destabilizing a system that produces a lot of jurisdictional meetings with very few complaints.
Thank you for your comment, Senator Farioli. I don't see any other questions. So
Chair Rosenbaum, and may I just answer something that Senator Farioli brought up, and it just slipped my mind, and that is the number of complaints. I think that in every commission meeting, the commission meets every 6 weeks, we have had at least one and sometimes two complaints about executive session violations. So in terms of 1,700 boards across the state and any number of meetings, there are very few, as Senator Beyer pointed out. Often when they go into executive session, there's no one in the room, so therefore there's no one to complain. That doesn't mean that the jurisdictions have not, in fact, violated the executive session law during the executive session. There's just no one there to observe that. We require a complaint to be filed by someone, usually a representative or a person claiming to be a representative of the news media who's been excluded, and then they file a complaint. Or if the representative of the media has been admitted into executive session and the discussion during executive session strays, one of the council members or the representative of the news media may file the complaint. We've had both types of complaints. So while they are not numerous in number, in terms of the proportion of our docket that they occupy there, it's a high percentage.
Are they against large? Is there tendencies to have them against larger organizations or very tiny?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, as you might expect, it's the smaller ones who don't have advice of legal counsel, who may not observe the niceties of the script, as you've said, and also who affect people who have the willingness and maybe an incentive to complain about it, the planning commissions and the water districts that don't have the resources to be able to follow the law. And as I said before, one of our major missions is education, and we conduct trainings on a weekly basis for everyone. We have them available on our website for self-learning. So that's one of our major missions, is education.
Okay.
Hard to fix.
Thank you again for your testimony, and I think clearly this needs some work, so we'll hopefully try to come to some kind of resolution, but that's what needs to happen clearly from this discussion. Thank you for your testimony. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 294. And Erin, is that completes our agenda for today?
Yes, Madam Chair, that does complete our agenda for today.
Okay. And with nothing further to come before us, members were adjourned. Thank you.